following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News and is brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jim Ozarski. Tom Silverstein is next to me here at Lambeau Field on a Wednesday, getting you this Packers Green 19 podcast to you a day early with the holidays. And, you know, I guess it can't come soon enough, right, if you're the Green Bay Packers after such a lackluster, at best, performance Sunday in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm sure they were very eager to get back to practice and stop having to watch tape of that game, because it had to be pretty depressing to watch themselves get absolutely destroyed on tape, review it all again, you know, scream two, I guess, is the way you would put it. It was bad, and sometimes the best thing is just to get it out of your system, just to get back on the field. Sometimes that's why those Thursday games are good. But they have sort of a jammed-up schedule because of Thanksgiving. They're going to practice, walk through on Wednesday, a little bit of a practice Thursday, and I think their Friday practice is pretty extensive.
Yeah, Friday will be a little bigger work day, I guess, than their normal Friday. Of course, they leave Saturday for the East Coast. And I guess, Tom, it feels like a replay of 2 weeks ago when we wondered how they would react coming off the performance in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they played well. They had well enough to win against Carolina with a goal line stand at the end of the game. I would expect, again, when you lose like that, even though the Giants are a bad team, you're not going to have as much of a slip, I guess, if you will.
The reason is they're playing the New York Giants. I think that's reason enough for them to expect to be just fine. I think they'll, take account of what they did in San Francisco and come out with a better game plan. And I think it'll probably work a lot better because they're playing a lot crappier team. And everything will look, you know, great after the Giants game. And then they'll play Washington and probably look pretty good after that.
Right.
And then they'll play Chicago and it may look good after that. I think if you're Matt LaFleur, what you're trying to do right now in these next 3 weeks is establish an identity and impose your will on these three teams. They need to play really good football and execute their offense and defense regardless of what the other team does. Just go out and do what, you know, run your inside zone, pound the ball, score a lot of points, do whatever it is that you do and get better at it.
Well, along those lines, the news of the week is the health of right tackle Brian Bulaga. Matt LaFleur said Wednesday he's not ready to rule him out for Sunday.
I would never rule Brian Bulaga out.
Yeah.
That guy's like an iron horse.
So. And so part of, you know, they called up Yosh Ninjman off the practice squad. Look, he said Billy Turner's going to get looked at right tackle. That would make me think if that's the case, Lucas Patrick is the right guard. To me, if Brian Bulaga can't play, that's the best five. And then you keep Alex Light in the sort of swing backup role if something happens Sunday.
I wasn't there. Did anybody ask him about Yosh?
No one asked him about Yosh.
I'm curious what their thought is about him. You know, that's a tough ask to a guy who's never played in the NFL to come out and start at right tackle. And I'm not expecting that. But I am interested to see what comes out of his practice week. We won't get to see it. But this guy is a massive human being. He's really athletic. He wasn't drafted because he really was a very raw player, you know. And But I remember seeing him in training camp, and I liked him in training camp. I thought he was really impressive at left tackle. Some of his run blocks were really impressive. So I don't know. I am sort of eager. I don't expect him to start. I think you're right. It could be Billy Turner if it's not Bulaga.
Yeah, I think if even if Bulaga plays, I think you're right, Tom. They need to go back to their identity, which is Aaron Jones. I mean, we've talked about it for many weeks. This has nothing to do with Davante Adams is back, so the pass game is stalled. The common thread in when the Packers offense doesn't look good is when 33 doesn't get the ball 20 to 25 times. Right. And I think that's the identity to me. However you choose to run it, inside zone, outside zone, screen pass, he's shovel pass, whatever it may be, Tom, I think that's I think they need to get to that, and whatever that is over these next few weeks, because, you know, getting Davante Adams involved is what you want to do in the pass game. We've talked about that. He's their best option there. He's their best player. Yeah. But clearly, when they look good, it's 33 drives it, and then you have the quarterback play off of that. And what better way to slow pass rush than a good running game, right? Or those screen games, the misdirection game that we just haven't seen when they don't play well.
Well, and, if they don't have if the running game's not there, or if the Giants decide they're going to take it away, I want to see whether they can come up with a game plan that doesn't consist solely of just throwing down the field. You have to replace your runs with passes that look like runs or act like runs. So if you can't run the ball, then you need to pass the ball in ways that resemble runs. So you're getting 4 or 5 yards, 6, 7 yards, easy completions, because that's what runs are when you're doing well. And then all of a sudden your third downs aren't as bad. And I think it means taking fewer shots down the field until you establish the run, quote
right.
unquote.
No, yeah, for sure. And I don't know, if Bulaga's healthy or otherwise, they can do it this week against the Giants. The Giants are a bad team. They've lost 7 straight. I think they are a little bit more competitive with Daniel Jones. I think he's got some talent.
He's got a chance to be pretty good. He's tough.
But he's a rookie. He's fumbled 14 times, which is incredible.
Yeah.
He's also thrown 8 interceptions, so he's very much a rookie. Saquon Barkley hasn't been the same since he had that high ankle sprain at the end of September. Mm-hmm. Still have to respect him. Packers might catch a break with Evan Ingram not practicing as we record this with a foot sprain, because the combination of an athletic tight end over the middle and Golden Tate in the slot and Saquon Barkley might have been enough to make Mike Pettine just say, oh, geez, our guys need a break. But they're just not good. They made, defensively, they made Mitchell Trubisky look somewhat competent last week, when they lost to the Bears. So their pass rush isn't nearly what the Packers have seen the last 3 weeks. So I think it's an opportunity, you're right, Tom, to whatever Matt LaFleur decides, to execute it and have it look okay. The Giants just they don't do anything well at all. Their head coach is asking if he's getting fired every week. I mean, it's what Adrian Amos said post-game. Can't let the 49ers beat you twice, right, going into this week?
Yeah. That's well said. You can't have a hangover going into that game, coming off that game. And I think with the Giants, as long as they have a few players on defense that you have to worry about. Leonard Williams is a guy you've got to worry about. Jabril Peppers was a guy I had to worry about, but I'm not sure that he's going to play. He's got, a broken transverse process or something like that. So he's probably not going to be there. You know, I don't know what, you know, what stands in the way of them having a big offensive day. I don't think anything does. Maybe if it's really windy at Giant Stadium like it tends to be. But other than that, this should be a game where they get really healthy.
Yeah, and that's and I guess that would be the takeaway after the fact, Tom, is if it doesn't go that way, you know, where it's a slog of 24 points or frankly, you know, let's flip to the defense here. You know, if the Giants, for whatever reason, are able to impose their will with Saquon Barkley and run the ball, mm-hmm. right? I mean, again, this is the NFL. They do have some good players. I guess Mike Pettine is probably hoping his group kind of takes to heart, you know, getting punched in the mouth over and again in San Francisco and, you know, take advantage of that rookie quarterback and, you know, a receiving core that isn't – look, Kevin Keating and Jaire Alexander should not need as much help as maybe they would have needed, you know, in other areas. Giants aren't good.
What do you want to see Patton's defense do? What do you think what have you not seen from them, and what is it that you want to see?
I haven't seen – look, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith are going to the Pro Bowls, right? So you've got two outside pass rushers with double-digit sacks. Where is the other pressure? You know, I know Jerry Montgomery, the D-line coach, and Pettine will say it's about affecting the quarterback and making him move off his spot and all these other things. But at the end of the day, if a Smith isn't getting a sack on third down, mm-hmm. they're not getting off the field. Teams are putting drives together. Carolina, you know, Kenny Clark finally showed up at the end of that game. I guess that's what I'm not seeing. I'm not seeing consistent look, I want to see sacks. I get the whole get off a quarterback off the spot, make him throw, you know, mm-hmm. when he doesn't want to. But where you know, Blake Martinez finally had a sack on a blitz situation. Clark hasn't had anything since week two. Where's Dean Lowry been? I'm just sort of looking. I know Rashawn Gary. I'm not in the boat of he's a bust, all that stuff. But again, we saw him flash. We saw 52 around the quarterback early in the year.
A little bit,
right? But where it's week 13.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I can't put it all on the coverage when only to me two guys are getting home. I don't know if you see it that way, but I'd like to see they have to change something. Right? This defense has been terrible the last handful of weeks in terms of points allowed, yards allowed. That seems like the thing that Mike Pettine can help create is our pressure packages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I'd like to see the DBs involved in a little bit more of the pressure. I think he's kind of abandoned the corner blitzes. He'll bring the safety once in a while and replace it. You know, he'll have a safety replace an outside linebacker in the blitz. I don't think we've seen very much, zero blitzes. We haven't seen really heavy six-man blitzes. I just haven't seen the rush sort of marry up with the coverage, and it just seems like every time they like you said, if they don't get to the quarterback, it doesn't mean that it should still mean that there's a chance they don't complete a pass. I mean, the guy should scramble, should be chased. Even if he gets away from the rush, he should have to scramble for 5 yards and be out of bounds and right. not get the first down. You know, you don't see that. Anytime a guy gets away, it seems like he makes a play on them. And that's part of the problem. They need to get back to turning the ball over, too. Their guys can't hang on to passes. They aren't in position to make interceptions. I think they have to be more of a turnover machine too, and they're going to have that opportunity.
Yeah, it's I think another thing, Tom. You know, and again, this is week 13, and I know on this podcast I've said this defense kind of is what it is. I was a little skeptical that a lot could change even after the bye. But considering the personnel they have, I don't know if this hybrid safety thing, the interchangeable safety corner thing, I guess I've seen enough of that to not be impressed. But I don't know what that means. I don't know if Oren Burks is in practice and is just so awful that he can't play. And this is a Josh Jackson, Josh Jones situation where high draft pick, all the athleticism in the world, why doesn't he play? Well, Josh Jones isn't here, and Josh Jackson might not be here like that. So I don't know if we can ask him about it, and it's always kind of like, oh, well, this, that, and the other thing. But that has to be the answer, right? That these guys don't practice well. They don't show anything during the week to allow them to play.
So I think you have to find a way to get your best players on the field. And one of the guys I think who's been getting cheated out of snaps is Kyler Fackrell. He gets cheated out of snaps because they want to get Gary on the field, and Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith are on the field all the time. And I think one of the ways they could get Fackrell on the field is to make him one of those inside linebackers and passing downs. He's big enough, you know, he's not going to be a huge run stuffer, but he can cover.
Yeah. And he's smart in pass protection.
Yeah.
Pass
and
coverage.
He's good, you know, in zone because he's so long. I saw Patton do that a little bit. It was more of a dime package. And it was a three-man rush, and they put Fackrell with Martinez, and they kind of just dropped into coverage. And I think that's something they can do. You know, you want to get your best players on the field. And I kind of feel like Fackrell, you know, as a 10.5 sack guy, hasn't been on the field as much. And that's one way to try to shoot some adrenaline into their defense.
Yeah, and at this point, you know, I mentioned affecting the quarterback and getting sacks. He's probably been the hard luck guy of this defense, where I can think of already maybe four times he's had the quarterback on his way to the ground and there's been the flip out, right, for a completion or something like that. So he has been around, and I agree with you. In that sense, because to me, that's something different, and that's a guy who, as you said, you can trust him in some zone coverages, and I don't think he's as much of a liability if the team decides, you know, if the offense says, oh, there's 51, let's run it at him, like they do with, you know, if Channon Sullivan drops down when Will Redmond was shot, or even Campbell to that degree. I mean, he's still a little bigger body.
I think that's something they have to explore. I think you have to put your best players on the field. And if sometimes they aren't classically fit for every position, but you got to put them where they do what they do best. And, you know, one of the things with Rashawn Gary is that he plays a lot of third downs, and he's not very good at rushing the passer right now. And so can you find something for him to do to be effective? He's a massively strong guy. He's very athletic. Maybe he needs to play a little bit more on early downs instead of trying to force him to become this pass rusher that he's not there, you know, he's not capable of being right now. I don't know. I just think Patton has gotten in a little bit of a stale rut with pegging guys in certain positions.
Yeah, I wonder if Gary, you know, he's played with his hand on the ground coming out of school.
Yeah,
and I think
basically a 4-3 end.
Yeah, and I guess for me with that, Tom, is look, yes, there is such a thing as development, and Mike Smith can say, well, in X amount of years when Rashawn Gary has all these sacks. Whatever, right? They're 8-3. and trying to make the playoffs for the first time in 2 years and make a run. And so to your point, I mean, is Rashawn, are they better served with Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, Rashawn Gary with their hand on the ground?
Yeah.
And Kyler Fackrell as that fourth line? Like, you know what I mean? It's just Rashawn Gary can develop in practice.
Yeah.
If you think he can give you something else up front. But I don't know. Coaches are always they like to speak about the best 11s and the best 5s and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, without an injury, they seem very reticent to do such things.
Coaches fall into a comfort zone.
Yeah.
That's what they're – you know, they default to a comfort zone. Well, I feel comfortable with Ibrahim Campbell on the field or playing this, you know, dime defense with a nickel linebacker. I think he's got to shake a couple of things up and stop being so predictable, because it was really clear that San Francisco attacked them sort of like Kansas City attacked them. I mean, they saw all the same mistakes, you know, the inability to follow motion and be able to get outside with the run game. I just think that he's got to figure out a way to at least shake it up so they're not quite as predictable as they have been. That's also offensively, too. I think that's true. I think they can continue to hope that every other game Jimmy Graham has a good game, or that Mercedes Lewis is going to make a play. At some point, you got to say, you know, Jay Sternberger and Robert Tonyan are our future. Get them on the field. And whether that means sitting down, you know, Graham or Lewis, I don't know. But you're not getting anywhere with those guys. You know, Graham had one good game, you know, and that's been it. And I'd rather see Sternberger, who is young and has fresh legs and gives his all blocking, I'd rather see him on the field than I would Graham or Lewis.
Yeah, but again, to your point of coaches like to default into comfort, and, you know, we've talked about this at various points, even last year, depending on certain players, where sometimes the front office has to take people away from coaches. Mm-hmm. We're not at that point. I mean, no one's getting cut, and I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know if you can, if this head coach is in a spot where he's going to, I don't want to say bench a guy because that's not what it would be, but more clearly rotate.
Yeah.
Where it's the two.
Stop relying on Jimmy Graham and thinking that he's going to have big games every game. He's not. It's going to be occasional. And so if that's the case, start looking forward. And the way you get better at the end of the year is your young guys start to play better.
Yeah.
And you start to show things that you didn't have earlier in the year. And I realize there's blocking consequences to playing Tonyan and Sternberger. But I also wonder what our team's going to do if those two guys are on the field together and they have the option of splitting them out or lining them up as tight ends. So I just think they're in such a rut everywhere, you know, offense, defense, that they got to start shaking it up and figuring out new ways to use personnel.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if this first-year head coach has that sort of wherewithal. I mean, because that's part of it, you know, to say, to not scrap things, but to be, especially when you're, because you're right, the default could be, well, we're 8-3. We, you know, we've won four in a row at one point, and these are just good teams. You know what I mean? So it's and we could see they might not change a thing and beat the Giants 32-7.
Yeah.
Because the Giants are awful. And you're like, well, what changed? What did that accomplish?
Is a game where you can do that.
Right.
Where you can work a Tonyan and Sternberger, or I don't know. I don't know if Dexter Williams is ready to play, but it just something different. I think about, you know, a lot of the things that my perspective is uncovering McCarthy for the last 13 years, and of course I covered Holmgren before that, And one of the things good coaches do is they get blinders on, and they get really thinking that certain guys are necessary. And I remember McCarthy getting absolutely stuck on Ty Montgomery and thinking that he was such a good athlete and they were going to continue to develop him, and they were neglecting Aaron Jones. And it was clear to everybody else that Aaron Jones needed to be on the field. And to McCarthy, it wasn't quite clear. And then finally, you know, it became clear.
Right.
You know, so I think that's where your assistant coaches have to be pushing and saying, we gotta, you know, push the envelope a little. We're 8-3, but we gotta be able to hit December running. And I don't think that's what they're doing right now. I think they're kind of stagnant.
Yeah, and that's, look, you know, 13 weeks in, 11 games, but yet again, you know, these are all first year offensive position coaches, right? And guys who are, it's their first run through. And do they have, you know, outside of Ben Sermons, right? Does Justin Outen have the capital to say these two tight ends who know more football than I do can't do it anymore?
Right, right.
You know, I don't know. Does Adam Stenovich have the wherewithal to say, I mean, I'm personally not a believer in undrafted tackles, but Yosh Nijman is the guy. Like, you know what I mean? We don't know that, the answer to that question. I mean, I guess we'd find out if it happens.
I think Brian Gutekunst put him on Yosh Nijman on the roster for a reason.
Yeah.
Because he watches practice, he gets tape of practice, and they had a need after Cole Madison got hurt, and they could have gone out and found another tackle somewhere, but they picked this guy, and so I don't think he'd put him on there if he didn't think he was ready to play.
Right.
If they don't start thinking a little bit outside the box, I don't know what their final month of the season is going to look
like. Well, obviously they want to win and play well, but however you want to play it, elevate your entertainment experience at the Midwest's premier entertainment destination, home to 24/7 gaming, dining, shows, and an expanded luxury hotel and full-service spa. It's all happening right here at Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. We touched on this post-game in San Francisco, and one area they can't really do much personnel-wise, but there is an issue, is what has happened to J.K. Scott and what hasn't happened in their return game. We'll start with Scott, you know, and they played such good complementary football when they've won games, and he has sort of gradually started losing consistency, whatever it may be. You know, the 37 yards and putting the defense in a position to defend only 50 yards of field or 60 yards of field. Can you put your finger on anything? I mean, other than the coaches say, oh, it's not good enough. But he's had good conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was the snow game in Carolina, but honestly, that's the only one.
Yeah.
I mean,
their conditions have not been an issue. I think he's in a slump. I think something mechanically or in his head has gone haywire, which happens with specialists. It happens all the time, especially with young ones. Most special teams coaches are not qualified to coach kickers and punters. They're not. I mean, they have specialists for that kind of stuff, because it really is a specialty. And I don't know that I blame Sean Menenga for J.K. Scott's, you know, form or whatever. All he can do is point out what he sees. What I do see, though, is that I think from a special team standpoint, there's like no confidence in anything they do. So they're really, their coverage, if you look at their coverage hasn't been bad. You know, Mason Crosby has been good on kickoffs. They haven't given up a touchdown. punt coverage is pretty decent. Their gunners are pretty good. But where is anything that just says, you know, that just is a shot in the arm for these guys? There's not been a fake. There's not been an onside kick, you know, like a surprise
onside
kick.
Yeah, they tried the one at Tony, you know, where Tony Brown ran off sides in Los Angeles, which they didn't.
At the end of a game, right. But where's a surprise one? Where's a fake field goal?
Punt block.
Or a fake punt? Or everything is pretty much just vanilla. And sometimes all it takes is like a big play for a guy like Scott to all of a sudden for him to gain confidence, you know, when the rest of the special teams is doing stuff. Right now, all the pressure is on him. He's the special teams.
Yeah, he's basically being asked in a lot of ways to be amazing every kick as a second-year punter, to be the, you know, when Aaron Rodgers says, wow, we've had clutch punts, you know. And, you know.
It doesn't excuse that he's not punting well, but it does give you some idea that as a special teams, everything's on him. I mean, Crosby has some of that, but Crosby can take whatever is given to him. He hasn't had to kick game-winning field goals or anything like that. So that's just been circumstance. It's really been all on J.K. Scott. And so without a return game, without them causing any fumbles in the return game, they don't
turnovers. What's done is done, in the sense of Brian Gutekunst probably being a little too quick to get a six-rounder for Trevor Davis. I mean, Sean Menenga admitted he has been conservative with a lot of things. And I don't know how you fix negative punt return yards. I don't know how you – I mean, I guess to me that's where there is some coaching – in terms of your return element, are they blocking? Are they blocking well enough for those punt returners to get going?
Any good?
Right. Are you at a point where, in plus field position, it's got to be Jair Alexander? You know, at least put him there and see what happens. Do they kick it out of bounds? As opposed to you kick it to Trey Smith and he gets negative yards again.
Yeah.
I just kind of wonder, as we've talked about this a couple of times, Tom, like, when you talk about sparks and confidence, I mean, special teams, you can do that. You can – to me, that's the one area you can kind of manufacture that.
Yes.
When you can't necessarily do that offensively or defensively sometimes.
Exactly. It's the closest thing to college football, special teams, where I always laugh when people said, oh, the Packers, they don't have any spirit, or they don't have any, you know, they're flat and they're playing, you know, this is professional football. It's different. And it's not a rah-rah game. And so, but the one area that is a special team, because it's just flat out chaos, and it can really pump guys up. So they are like as vanilla and uninspired on special teams as I think you can imagine. So that's been an issue for them in terms of getting guys ready to play or getting guys really fired up.
Right. So I think the overriding theme of this midweek podcast, Tom, is just a kind of a team that's treading water. You know, they're 8-3, but I don't know if anybody feels great about that.
Right.
And because, look, the three losses they had, two have looked terrible, and the third was against an NFC team at home that, you know, if things break differently for the Eagles, I mean, they still might be coming to Lambeau Field with the way the East is still in flux. So, you know, Dallas was an interesting win, but as you said, the Vikings are still hanging out there. Right, so it just makes you wonder: can they tread water in this fashion, or
no,
does the new head coach?
To get moving. They have to be on an upward trajectory, and they're not. They're sort of on a flat trajectory. Yeah. Well, it went down last week, and it's probably going to come up a little bit in the next 3 weeks, but unless they're just flashing all kinds of things, different things, or really successful games, blowouts, then you know, there's no reason to think that they'll be any different when they play Minnesota.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. They get obviously heading to New York this weekend, and their final two home games, Washington and Chicago.
Yep.
And obviously all very winnable.
They'll be favored until they play Minnesota. Soda,
yeah, and that could be, you know, everything on the line in that one in terms of getting that, whether a bye is still in play, whether that winning the division, getting a home game, or slipping to a wild card spot where maybe having to go back to U.S. Bank Stadium 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, or San Francisco.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot on the line. I'm curious to see how a veteran defensive coordinator handles this with his group, with essentially a veteran group too. Like, there's no, you know, you're not really dealing with like young guys.
No,
right?
It's not, I mean, a really so young defense.
Yeah,
have
so
a few young players in certain spots, but it's not. It's not like a Ted Thompson defense from
right.
years gone by.
So I think to me there's room for some of that, and even offensively. So we'll see. You know, as the Packers get going here, and you know, we appreciate you guys on this holiday week downloading and subscribing and listening to this podcast. And of course, you can send us your feedback on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, email for Tom. And, of course, download, subscribe, jsonline.com, packersnews.com. You can get all of pertinent Packers information just because there's a bad NFC game, Detroit and the lot, Bears.
Yeah, oh. On Thursday morning.
Yeah, that's watch that before you eat. Don't eat before that.
Yeah.
Because that might not taste so good.
Yeah, I don't know, but it could spoil your appetite, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast.
And yeah, of course.
And you don't have to talk to your relatives either.
Yeah, that too. So Tom will be out in New York. This is a trip I am not making. So the post game pod.
We'll have to figure that out.
Yeah,
huh?
You might have a surprise guest or two.
Yeah.
And see who can join Tom on that podcast. And you're.
Maybe we can figure out how to do it by phone too, so you can call in. I don't know.
Can I be an angry Packers caller?
Jim from Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'll read all the mean tweets.
You can definitely get into the live blog. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Right. So thank you all, of course, for listening, and we will talk to you this weekend.
Everybody have a really happy Thanksgiving and definitely. Safe Thanksgiving. Obviously.